Just to switch gears a bit, I do want to focus on one of your last chapters in the book, which talks a lot about the foreign rule of law projects and the environmental aid projects that have been happening in China for the past decade. Now, as part of your research, you were able to attend some of these foreign-sponsored conferences and see some of the effects of this foreign aid. Can you give us a little bit of background on this and what the landscape looks like for foreign aid projects in the environmental sphere?
Sure. So I was I did most of the research for this book between the end of 2006 and the beginning of 2008.
Okay.
And I wasn't really originally planning to write about international NGOs or foreign aid, but as I was sort of doing my interviews in China at that point, I realized that it was impossible to really, it wasn't a purely domestic story.
Yeah.
That it would be weird to write about environmental lawsuits.
Right.
And not write about the foreign, mostly international NGOs, who are trying to support environmental lawyers and environmental lawsuits and the development of public interest law in China. And so, you know, I'd say like once every 2 weeks or around that much, I would get an email or something like that announcing some kind of roundtable or training program or workshop on one of those themes, whether it was environmental law or there was a lot on public interest law and public interest litigation. These were ideas that were really very much in the intellectual ether and really being promoted by a range of international NGOs. So I felt like I had to write something about those efforts
and
the kind of effect that I thought they were having.
And what do you think, I mean, based upon what you viewed, what do you think the efficacy of these programs are?
Well, I think, I don't, you know, I tried to write the chapter right down the middle. People react to it really differently.
Yeah.
But what I was trying to say was I think that they have some successes in an extremely difficult environment for action. I think what's challenging is that these programs have been caught up in the seduction of quantification.
Yeah.
There's a ton of pressure to count things, to have quantifiable outcomes for these programs. And I think often, in a worst-case scenario, that boils down to counting the number of people trained.
Right.
How many trainings can we run? How many can we run in how many different areas of the country? How many people have been there? And I think this is really the wrong approach, because where I see the successes of these programs are not on the mass level. So if you have 100 people at a training, I think 95 of them are going to go back to their same old existence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that's as we would expect.
Yeah.
I mean, think about how many training, you know, 3-day workshops you've been to and how
I've
few
been
of the,
to a lot.
Yeah, I mean,
I go back to my old life a lot.
Yeah, me too. Like, I can't think of any 3-day workshop I've been to that's changed the direction of my life. So I think that the effects are most evident for a very small minority of people.
Right.
Who really use these to as springboards to really change their life and their commitments.
Right.
And I also think they can be really effective in promoting ideas and putting ideas into circulation and discussion that were not there before. So I think those effects are really important, but they're almost impossible to quantify.
Right.
Which is why it's so frustrating for donors.
I know, yeah. And I mean, in the past, like, couple of months, I mean, you have seen some foreign donors, like the Canadian government and the Swedish government, pulling out its aid to China on a lot of these projects. And, I mean, do you think it's a smart move? I mean, what do you think will be the result if more donors followed suit and pulled out aid from China for projects like this?
I think donors have been pulling out because the economic argument of providing aid to China holds absolutely no water anymore. It's clear that China
is a very wealthy nation.
I mean, they should be giving us aid if you look at it as you know, as a tool for economic development or something like that. I'm waiting for the discourse to shift so that we look at these programs as a tool of diplomacy.
Yeah.
Which is really how I see them.
Yeah, and I think you note that in the book, and I think that's important that I think gets lost in the shuffle about quantifying all of these projects, is that you learn who's on the ground. If you do the projects right, you learn who's on the ground in like remote areas that's doing really cool work, and that can help, you know, you can find out who those people are and see what's really happening and stuff.
Yeah, so. I mean, your question was about what we're going to lose.
Yeah.
And when I think about what we're going to lose, one of the big things I think about is we're going to lose a lot of knowledge about China.
Yeah.
Because the people who have been involved in these projects for a really long time, thinking about folks at the Ford Foundation or the American Bar Association,
right.
These are some of the Americans who are most knowledgeable about what's going on in China, and, you know, some of very few American voices that are on the ground participating in any way in domestic debates over what should happen with rule of law.
Right. So, just in closing, where do you see environmental litigation and or the environmental movement, now that you're comfortable calling it that, where do you see it going in China in the future?
Well, the environmental movement is totally going to take off. Now that it's here and I'm comfortable with it, I'm going to predict.
Now that you've written a book, it's going to take off.
No, I really think so, though, because I just see growing demand for reduction of risk. So not just environment, but also food safety.
Yeah.
There is no question that Chinese citizens are and have a right to expect, and increasingly will expect government regulation to reduce risk in their lives. I'm not exactly sure what form that reduction of risk is going to take.
Right, I'm not sure.
It may take the form of regulation and beefing up regulatory agencies as opposed to courts and judges. That's the part that's not clear. I do think that the Chinese government will be responsive to these demands for risk reduction, but exactly how they're going to be responsive is not yet clear. And this area is changing so fast.
Yeah.
It was so hard to let this book go off to the publishers because the story is changing every year. You know, between when I started this book and when I finished it, laws on standing changed. 95 environmental courts opened around the nation. China, Greenpeace brought their first environmental lawsuit in China.
So I guess you already have the second edition ready.
Any day now. Just talk to my publisher about it.
So, well, thank you for joining us, Rachel. If people are interested in purchasing your book, it is a great book, Environmental Litigation in China, A Study in Political Ambivalence. Where can they do that?
They can buy it on Amazon, and I would be delighted.
Oh, okay, it's on Amazon. That's great. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
All right, bye-bye.